Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, January 7th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday to you, too. Tons of things going on today, and we're going to start out... we had stocks rise a little bit in volatile trading. The trade talks are beginning, and everyone believes that Trump is winning the game of the game of chicken that's being played right now with China. So let's hope that stays the same, and but that could change soon. We're also going to talk a little bit about how Trump. Just 15 minutes ago, I believe there was a President Trump is going to address the nation before visiting the southern border amid the shutdown. I'll view that here after we do the market report for January 7th, 2019. You know what, 2019 is a lot easier to say than 2018 for some reason. I don't know. I'm going to like 2019. It just has a great ring to it. It's going to be good for gold. Gold today was $1,289 off its high of $1,295, settling in at a positive $380. $380 for gold at $1,289. Silver, it tried, but it came back a little bit, 5 pennies at $15.72. And for some reason, my platinum and palladium numbers aren't showing any 8 updates, but we're looking at platinum at $825 and palladium was $1,312. Earlier in the day, I did see pressure on those white metals as also, and I'm assuming they're a little bit lower, but for some reason, my screen is not updating. And I have been having, for some reason, at this time of day, it happened last week, I'm losing internet connections and so forth, and so that could be why my numbers aren't showing. But the USDX today is down 0.51 at 95.69, with crude oil up 71 cents at 48.67. And the paper markets today, you're looking at the Dow up 98 points, 23,531. The NASDAQ is up 84, 6,823. The S&P was up 17, 2,549. Blah, 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 blah. The 10-year yield, 2.68%, is higher by 0.02. Japan was up almost 2.5%. And, it was a kind of an odd day. I think everyone is just, I don't know if they're just sidetracked with what's going on or if they're waiting for, some sort of something to happen, something to break loose. But I did find this article earlier today, Dave. And came out about 3 o'clock this afternoon, where the there's a high profile group of banks, brokerages, and market makers. They revealed plans today to join forces and start their own trading venue. Have you heard about that?
I did see that, Melody.
And it's called the Members Exchange.
MEMEX.
MEMEX, and this is the launch of the new exchange. It's backed by Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, UBS, Citadel Securities, Fidelity. They said they're frustrated because the fees were just too big. I'm just like, are you kidding me? Really?
I know. Hey, a couple million here, a couple million there. I guess that's probably a portion of a department's bonus.
Yeah, their aim to disrupt the exchange business, which is dominated by just a few small players, and their goal is to simplify and lower fees by boosting competition and increasing transparency. Sure you are. Transparency is a word they don't know. But anyway, yeah. Some of these founding members is Charles Schwab, E-Trade, Morgan Stanley, TD Ameritrade, and they said they're going to take the ball and start their own thing. But what's interesting, though, the NASDAQ, the spokesman for NASDAQ told CNN Business, he says they welcome the competition to our transparent, highly regulated equity markets. However, with dozens of equity trading venues already in operation in the United States, we are keen to learn more about the value proposition of the new exchange. And here were some interesting numbers, I thought, before we head on into to some of the other things that we wanted to talk about today. You know, there might be many trading venues, but the business is concentrated in the hands of a few powerful players. 61% of stock trades that took place at just three exchanges in 2018, that's the NYSE, the NASDAQ, and the CBOE. The New York Stock Exchange led the way with nearly one quarter of the market. Another fifth went to NASDAQ. The next closest player was the IX Group. That exchange was founded in 2012 in a bid to capitalize on concerns about the high-frequency trading that was sparked by the Michael Lewis's novel, The Flash Boys. So while IX has been slow to gain market share, MEMX could have a leg up. And this is something, before I finish this up, this TAB group said that 36% of the stock trading volume in 2018 took place off exchange. That's 36%. That includes action at dark pools, those exchanges that allow anonymous trades, often between large institutions, other off-exchange trading places, when high-speed trading firms like Virtue purchases retail order flow from brokers, and they execute these transactions themselves. And sometimes brokers make over-the-counter trades for institutional clients. So, you know, I find that kind of 36% are trades reality, nobody knows about.
Is it real or is it MEMX?
You know, MEMX raised $70 million in the initial round of funding and hopes to add new investors at a later time. So there's, I don't see any dates on this. I guess they're in the process, but it could be, you know, a while before. But like another exchange, but you know, 36%. That's, you know, anonymous.
You know? Not peanuts.
So, you know, do people really believe they have a chance, an opportunity to really do well in the paper markets? And if you do well, how long will you be doing well? And there was one more thing I wanted to touch on. Oh, I was going to go back to President Trump. And that just disappeared on me. Let me see if I can bring it back. And if I can't, we'll just have, yeah, I lost my, the reason I lost it was because my internet connection was lost. But Trump is going to deliver a primetime address. He's going to travel to the southern border. He's going to address the nation tomorrow. He seeks to highlight border security and presses Democrats for wall funding amid the protracted standoff that triggered the shutdown. And I guess there's not a whole much else about it, except this is the first for his presidency to where he is going to address the nation from the Oval Office. Well, it's just a matter of time until there was a reason.
I'm sure the fact checkers will be front and center tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern time.
No, probably. I'm sure they will be. I'm sure they will be. But I guess I can't believe it's the 20th day already of the shutdown, the partial shutdown. It's not a true shutdown. It's a partial shutdown. And
time flies, especially when you have bills to pay and no paycheck to pay them off with.
Well, you know, the thing of it is, though, most of those people still get paychecks up until this week. So, and they're going to be reimbursed for all their back pay. So no one's without a check yet. I believe there are some contractors and so forth that I understand could, you know, have some issues and so forth. But, you know, three quarters of the government is funded already. So, you know, it is what it is. And it's, you know, it just goes to show that these, it'll be interesting to see what he says tomorrow. But, and it's also another point, ladies and gentlemen, people shouldn't, you do need to put money aside, you know, because emergencies happen, situations, it could be your health, It could be, I mean, we know from the reports, you know, we've been talking about for the past, you know, how many years, people don't have any money saved for emergencies, for a $400 emergency, up to a $1,000 emergency, depending on your age. You know, so again, you know, put those credit cards away, put some money in the bank for when there is an emergency. So if you do get laid off, so if there is a gap in your wages or so forth, and this just doesn't apply to government workers. I mean, I'm sure they get paid well when they do. But you have to think ahead and try to stay out of debt. If you're not in debt, then you're not living paycheck to paycheck. And that's, you know, it's just another reminder of how we should be handling our finances. And you know, it's difficult in today's world when everything is so expensive, you know, when everything is dangled in front of us, and, you know, it's difficult to say no to a lot of things. You know, it is different from our grandparents' day when they didn't buy things when they didn't have the money for it. They didn't go into debt for cars. They didn't go into debt for, you know, for TVs. They didn't go into debt for cell phones and so forth. So, report today how these investors are dumping stocks and corporate bonds at the fastest pace ever. You have mutual funds that invested in equity and bonds lost a record $152 billion in December. David Sanchi, he's director of liquidity research at TrimTabs, said that demand for the U.S. equity ETFs have been diminishing. The liquidity outlook for U.S. equities remains downbeat. The indicators remain that there's a neutral for the short term and an outright bearish for the intermediate term. So, and if you look at the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average, they were down 6.2% and 5.6% respectively for 2018.
Well, we know that much of the blame for the recent sell-off has been cast on the Fed's rate increases, and as well as the ongoing trade war with China, which certainly dented the appetite for riskier assets. Although the stock market seemed to initially recover in the new year, driven by the Fed's more dovish stance and some solid job numbers that came out last week, the outlook for stocks still remains gloomy, and I'll add, to say the least. Now, there's this TrimTabs Demand Index, the TTDI. It uses a special statistical analysis of fund flows and sentiment variables, investor sentiment, that is, for intermediate term timing. And that's been bearish for 13 consecutive trading days. Last year's underperformance came at a time when corporate America was committed to buying back, listen, ladies and gentlemen, 1.3 trillion of its stocks, just shy of the annual record of 1.46 trillion. In 2015. Now, you know, Melody has been talking about these buybacks a lot this year since last December's or December 17's corporate tax cuts. We sensed early on, as did many analysts, that, you know, more than $1 trillion in buybacks were going to occur in 2018. Well, just $340 million more than a trillion.
Billion. So, it'd be billion.
Billion,
right?
Beg your pardon. Yeah, right. Now, you know, in December alone, U.S. firms announced roughly $92 billion in corporate buybacking. That's a six-month high. Yeah. However, it was little use keeping the markets afloat. As we now know, the Dow shed 8.6% in December.
It's and, like, you know, if they didn't have that $92 billion corporate buy-in, where would it be? I mean, how many trillions of dollars have been lost?
Lots.
And, you know, we forget China. They've lost, what, $5 trillion, I think, in their markets this past year. I mean, this is a lot of trillions of dollars. Somewhere, somebody's got to be hurting. And you know what surprises me, Dave, is what? How they actually keep it so quiet. You know, who when you have that many trillions of dollars that are being lost, I mean, you have these smaller brokerage houses, you have these that are leveraged out and so forth. And it reminds me a lot of the oil industry. When the oil broke down to, you know, $25, $25 to $30, you know, there was a lot of companies that went out of business that couldn't pay their loans. But you don't hear anything about that because they're so leveraged and they couldn't make the payments. But you don't hear, so I can't even imagine where some of these businesses that have lost trillions of dollars, where are they? What's happened to them?
Well, they're running scared.
Absolutely.
They're hiding. You know, it's not a fun place to be. You know, I guess a lot of them thought, you know, particularly after last year's tax cuts, you know, that it was going to be, you know, a banner year, and, you know, things were, you know, just going to be so much more better for them themselves. But as it turns out, it's been anything but. You know, someone once said, a real friend is one who walks in when the rest of the world walks out. That's kind of a metaphor, I think, for where things are with, you know, all this this bad news that you're talking about.
And it's just like we saw the same thing when we had the, we don't hear these banks and the losses that they've taken through all these catastrophic weather-related events that we've had, you know, from Houston to California. I saw there was one company today, the California Property and Casualty Insurance Company. I mean, they're looking to losses of $30 billion.
Yep. So, yeah, we talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah. So who's gonna pay that? Government. You know, government will end up paying it. Of course, you know, they have to start funding Homeland Security in order to do so. But that will come. And there's more and more Americans who think it's a bad time to buy a home. It's dropped sharply. And this was according to a December survey from the mortgage giant Fannie Mae. Higher mortgage rates, increased home prices. I mean, that's what they're blaming. Homes are simply very expensive right now in relation to income, and there are still very few entry-level homes for sale. So while you have home prices are higher than they were 1 year ago, the pace of gains is decelerating. So, and that really, I don't know why the potential buyers are that in tune, but it's not lost on them from this report. We did see the mortgage rates did decline rather precipitously during December from an average 4.85% on a 30-year fix and at the start of the month to 4.61 on New Year's Eve. I can't believe we can't even finish this before we're heading into the next, into the break date. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. Acting on your best behavior, turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please visit the website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter and blogging articles from Dave. And the next break, I'm going to talk a little bit about $20 gold pieces. I went back and pulled up an old price sheet from 12709, and this will show you why the $20 gold pieces are really a no-brainer when you're buying gold and silver today. I mean, there's just so much potential in the price spreads in today's, you know, compared to bullion, spot gold compared to then is just an incredible, incredible example. So heading into the break, we were talking and finishing up about the a lot of Americans think it's a bad time to buy a home. Do you think that'll reverse itself with the lower rates, or how low do you think the rates will have to go in order for them to get back into the spirit? Spring, maybe?
Well, normally, yeah, normally there's a spring rebound in this cyclical market. But what concerns me in a bubble sense is that especially if wage growth continues to be constrained, and more so if we see unemployment start to dip up, is that, you know, buyers rather than, at least those who jump in, rather than going for their, you know, 15 or 30 year conventional fixed mortgages, are going to start, playing the market timing game and going with these 3 to 5 year ARMs that adjust afterwards. And I think that could exacerbate an already, not so good scenario in that market. And I mean, we could easily see in another year, if something like that happens, you know, rather than this, you know, call it what, you know, a downward trend or whatever, I'm not sure it would rise to the level of a bubble that we saw in 2007 and 8, but certainly it could lead to you know, a lot more defaults in a couple of years, you know, if interest rates are, as we believe they will be, higher, depending on what happens with world events and what have you.
Well, the thing is, if people aren't buying new homes, that means they're not buying new furniture, they're not buying new, you know, appliances, they're not buying new, even the refis, they're not going to Home Depot, or they're not going to, or maybe they are if they're not selling or buying homes. Maybe they're doing a little more fixing up. So it is kind of hard to tell right now exactly which direction. But I don't think the housing market is going to be what brings the system down this time around.
It may go down with it.
It's going to go down with it.
But it won't cause it.
It won't cause it.
To me,
I'm viewing this as an indicator of people's purchasing habits, the consumer, and what can they really handle And if we have a Federal Reserve that continues to raise rates, yeah, it's going to put a big damper on the economy. It's going to put a big damper on these people buying things. And we're going to talk about cars here in just a little bit after Dave updates us on the on Sears, because I guess now tomorrow is the deadline, I guess.
It's upon them, Melody. You know, another retail icon appears to be on its way out. You know, according to Company Insider, Sears is preparing to wind down after its chair, Eddie Lampert's bid to buy several hundred stores out of bankruptcy, fell short of bankers' qualifications on Friday. You know, the retailer started laying the groundwork for liquidation over the weekend, basically, when you know, its advisors weighed the merits of a $4.4 billion bid by Lampert's hedge fund to buy Sears. You know, if the 125-year-old retailer does die in bankruptcy, you know, just like Toys R Us did last year and Borders Books in 2011, it would mark the largest fatality yet in the retail apocalypse prompted by the shift to online shopping. Now, Lampert has failed to convince bankers of the viability of his bid. You know, it could still make last-minute improvements before a status hearing before the courts tomorrow. Lampert has also outlined a backup plan where he could pursue the purchase of some of Sears' parts, including real estate and intellectual property, such as its brand.
We were talking about homes. People weren't buying homes. Well, in terms of new vehicle sales in the United States, 2018 was the third down year in a row for three of the four biggest automakers. And yes, GM, Ford, Toyota. That's three. The peak sales occurred in 2015. GM sales were down 1.6% from 2017, down 2.9% from 2016, and down 4.2% from 2015. GM said it increased crossover and pickup trucks production in the fourth quarter to meet the strong global demand, and it expects higher sales in major markets for 2019. But the rest of the cars are left for dead. And, of course, we all know that GM has these big plans to shut down car assembly plants confirmed. Ford sales were down 3% from 2017. And, you know, they show the same type of downturns each year from 2016 and 2015. Ford is also leaving cars for dead. They're selling pickups, SUVs, but they're unable to make up for the multi-year collapse of car sales. Part of the volume problem at Ford is the urge to focus on high-priced vehicles with big, fat profit margins like pickups, SUVs, and the crossovers.
Yeah, Fiat Chrysler sales jumped 8.5% last year. This comes after that catastrophic year before, when sales had plunged close to 9%. Now, despite the gain in 2018, sales were still down 1% from 2016 and 1.3% for 2015. Toyota sales peaked in 2015 and have declined every year since. 2018 was down 0.3%, down almost 1% from 2016, and down virtually 3% from 2015. Quickly, the Japanese brands, the other ones, Honda sale dropped 2.2%, Nissan sales 6.2% drop, Subaru sales rose in 2018, was up a whopping 16.7% from 2015. That's a rare success story. Mazda sales rose in 18, almost 4%, but were down roughly 6%. From 2015. Mitsubishi sales, again, another outlier, jumped up 13.9% last year. For all six Japanese automakers combined, total sales dropped 1.3% from their peak in 2017.
Well, the German automakers, you have the BMW, Mercedes, and Volkswagen, they eked out a new high in 2018. They had a combined sales rising 3.6%. But the problem is they're small. They sell just 20% of the volume of their Japanese competitors. But they're Mercedes sales, they dropped. BMW sales inched up. And then, of course, again, Volkswagen, they rose. They rose pretty good. They were up 2% in 2018. So the Korean automakers, Hyundai and Kia, which are affiliated, went upscale like everyone else and are now paying the price. In 2018, their combined sales fell 0.6%, leaving them down 11% over the two-year period. For the industry, car sales, after 4 years of plunging, account for only 29% of total sales heading into 2019. And this is the lowest share on record in U.S. history.
The U.S. services sector expanded at a slower than expected pace in December. That's according to data released this morning. Melody talked a little bit about another aspect of the Institute for Supply Management Index, but the ISM said its non-manufacturing index clocked in at 57.6 last month. As we know, a reading above 50 does reflect expansion. But economists had expected that index to slip to just 59 in December. Now, prices in the services sector fell 6.7 percentage points, while employment slipped by 2.1 percentage point. December's reading, by the way, is all for the services sector is the lowest since July.
Wait,
go ahead.
That's why it amazes me that the jobs report was so strong for December.
It's an anomaly.
You gotta.
But nothing surprises us anymore, does it? I mean, just the contradiction. It's nuts.
You try to connect the dots, and it's like, You know, one and one is not equaling two here. Mm. But I saw this report too earlier today, and the World Bank president, he's going to resign February 1st. And that is more than 3 years ahead of the expiration of his term in 2022. And he said he's immediately going to join a private firm and focus on increasing infrastructure in developing countries. But the bank did not provide further details. So I think that's kind of interesting because we hear so much about the Democrats coming. I mean, would he include the United States as infrastructure? I just find this, the timing of this is kind of odd, and I'm just trying to read between the lines to come up with my own little, you know, theory or scenario to
In lieu of, you know, specifics, the private firm that's referred to here is an investment firm. Now, you know, it sounds like he's on the Kim's going to be on the research and not sales side of this. Nevertheless, I'm sure it was a very handsome compensation package, a deal too promising to pass up. I guess we'll hear in the coming weeks if there's anything, more to this than just another, greener pastures employment offer.
I don't know.
It is an interesting time.
Yes, it is. Let's see. What's next?
Well, you know, we know the government shutdown is approaching its third week. We know that it's not unusual for airport security agents, you know, who are tasked with screening passengers to call out sick. Even in noticeable numbers after the holidays, especially. But the partial government shutdown, you know, threatening to deny the nation's 51,000 TSA employees a paycheck come Friday. And the idea that more and more agents might be no-shows at checkpoints, some fear could have a cascading effect through airports and lead to longer lines. And more importantly, less safety for passengers and air crews, plane crews to boot. You know, such an outbreak this week has been dubbed the blue flu. Now, it's a reference to the blue shirts that TSA agents wear you know, Rudy Garcia, who's president of the American Federation of Government Employees Local 1040, I guess. It's the Union for Dallas TSA Employees. He said, you know, if you don't have a check to pay your bills, what are you going to do? You'll look for something outside of what you're doing now.
Yeah. It's called life. It's life. You know, and, you know, the thing of it is, everybody, you know, you hear all these stories about, you know, people living paycheck. But you know what? Well, let's hear the stories. Let's go back to the problem. Let's go back to the real problem.
What's
and,
that?
Well, what do you think the real problem is? It's D.C. You know, it's D.C., and it's the problem of getting anything done. My goodness gracious. It's, you know.
Dysfunction reigns pure.
And it's just like, so, you know.
It's not supreme, but it does reign pure.
Perhaps. Perhaps. Let's go ahead and talk about Pompeo. He says the U.S. is still committed to destroying ISIS.
That's good news.
Yeah, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who's about to go to the Mideast, said this morning that he planned the U.S. withdrawal of troops from Syria does not change the mission of destroying ISIS or stopping Iran from influencing the region. Pompeo said the U.S. Drawdown is a change of tactics, but not the U.S. commitment to the defeat of the caliphate or the ISIS globally. He says there is no change in our counter-Iran strategy. We have defeated ISIS in Syria. Trump said during the only reason for being there was to defeat ISIS. And
yeah, you know, this morning, the president tweeted that U.S. forces will be leaving at a proper pace while at the same time confronting to fight ISIS and doing all else that is prudent and necessary. So let me modify what I said earlier, that this is good news. Not necessarily good news for ISIS with U.S. Special Forces troops, you know, staying in town to help, you know, its allies in the Turkish Kurds and Turkish troops themselves in that bizarre fight against Bashar al-Assad's Syrian forces with whatever the heck Russia is still doing there. But Turkish President Erdogan did make a commitment to President Trump that the Turks would continue to counter ISIS after the U.S.'s departure. He also said the Turks would ensure that the folks that we'd fought with that assisted us in the counter ISIS campaign, the Kurds, would be protected.
Well, I'm sure they got a little heat from Israel.
Ooh,
and
it's,
yeah. You know, I'm sure, you know, really, I'm sure they got a lot of heat from Israel. And I think even Bolton came out yesterday and said that the withdrawal from Syria is going to be contingent upon cementing an agreement with Turkey. And it's like, you know, it's never any plan to bring the troops home, ladies and gentlemen.
Whatever happened to the indictment of Bibi?
Yeah, really. Hey, he's ready to be reelected again, I believe. Hey,
right.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light Systems today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. Just to go through the metal prices today before we move on, Dave, you have gold in the New York spot price after market up 360 at 1288.80. Silver's down 5 pennies at 1571. My white metals still haven't corrected. The USDX today is down 51.51 at 95.69. Crude oil is stronger at 48.67. Paper markets, they were up marginally. The Dow was up almost 100 points at 23,531. The NASDAQ was up 84 at 6,823. And the S&P was up 17 at 2,549. Dave, I pulled up some of my old pricing. I just went in the computer. In fact, this was probably the first computer-generated pricing I got from one of my buyers, December 7th, 2009. And of course, that's when gold was just beginning to take off before its run to 1900. We had another couple, about a year and a half before it got there. So, but this is an idea of what $20 gold pieces, the spreads. When I talk about the spread being between the coins and gold bullion, the spot, the melt value, are at 20-year lows. Let me give you an example. December 7th, 2009, spot gold was $1,142. Huh? December 7th, 2009, spot gold, $1,142.
Mm-hmm.
Mint state, 63. $20 Liberty gold piece was selling for $2,800. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a huge spread. $2,800 when spot was $1,142. That's $1,600. That's an incredible spread. Today, you have spot gold at $1,289, and you can buy the Mint State 63 $20 gold pieces at, well, I just had the price here, at $1,540. Well, look at that spread. I mean, you're looking at a $252 spread between bullion and the price of the coin, versus a $1,600 spread. And if you remember going back to 2009, what was going on at that point in time, if there isn't any reason you don't think that's going to happen again, you ought to just sell your gold and silver and be done with it. But I think most of us know what's coming is worse than what we saw in 2008 and 2009. So can you even imagine where these coin prices will be headed? So a tremendous opportunity to buy Mint State 63 $20 gold pieces at this level of $1,540. Amazing. And that's just one example. That's incredible. That's what happens when you have something that is supply and demand. So when you hear people tell you not to buy $20 gold pieces because you don't understand them, how hard is that to understand? You're not buying quote unquote rare coins. You're buying something that gets the benefit of the rare coin of the supply and demand factors. And when they tell you who's they won't be, you can't liquidate them. They're nuts. They're lying to you. That's exactly what they're doing. They're lying to you. These coins will be just as liquid, if not more so, because they will be in such high demand. Look at the premiums. That means people are in there buying them, and they're not there to be had, which pushes the prices up. So all gold will be easy to liquidate at any time in the future, regardless of what is going on, both gold and silver. So don't buy into that you can't liquidate gold. That's the silliest thing I've ever heard. I don't know the agenda of those that say these things, but what their true agenda is, probably I can guess here, is they don't want you to buy gold or silver. They'd rather have you in a paper investment. Now, how liquid do you think that's going to be? So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Well, I guess China is still willing to resolve the trade disputes with the United States, Dave.
We will see, won't we? You know, as officials from Beijing and Washington meet today and tomorrow to attempt to hash out their respective differences in this ongoing trade dispute. You know, China's foreign ministry said today that both sides had expressed a willingness to work together in order to implement the consensus of their respective presidents. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but, you know, Liu Kang, who's spokesperson at the foreign ministry, said that China itself is willing to resolve its trade disputes on equal footing. You know, those comments came as Deputy U.S. Trade Rep Jeffrey Gerrish leads a working team in China for this two-day talk of trade discussions. Now, trade tensions, you know, between the world's two largest economies escalated last year, putting global stock markets on edge and contributed a lot, if not largely, to the December downturn. The U.S. announced tariffs on $250 billion worth of Chinese goods earlier last year, afterwards being countered by $110 billion of tariffs from Beijing. Now, we know there's a 90-day ceasefire, so to speak, giving both sides till March 1st to reach some agreement, at least, on issues such as forced transfer of technology, intellectual property, and so forth. Melody.
Well, you know, Dave, today the U.S. Commerce Secretary, Wilbur Ross, he predicted that the Beijing and Washington could reach a trade deal that they could live with, as does the officials from the world's two largest economies, as you mentioned. But what I find interesting is because it's always the intellectual property rights that was always the big deal.
Right.
But Ross told CNBC that immediate trade issues would be the easiest to tackle, meaning that they're going to come to a fairly, you know, they're going to come to an agreement here shortly. But is it even going to include the enforcement issues and the structural reforms of the intellectual property rights and market access? He says that that's going to be more challenging to resolve. So if that's going to be more complex and more difficult to negotiate, so are they going to have it also in two separate agreements? Mm. You know, perhaps do the first one the easy one, and then because that's what it sounds like from what he said today.
Yeah, that in my mind makes more sense, especially, you know, remembering Xi's negotiating tactics in the past. I mean, give a little, you know, put the big decisions off for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to Kim Jong-un in North Korea. But, you know, if they do the Chinese, if they would agree to some additional market access for some of our goods, you know, it could potentially allow us to declare at least a partial victory, and move on, giving some sense of stability, foe as it may be, to the paper markets in the second and third quarters of this year.
So what about, speaking of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, how's that
Gosh, well, you know, State Department officials reportedly now have met multiple times recently with their North Korean counterparts in Hanoi, Vietnam, and where they discussed planning a second summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. U.S. officials discussed the schedule for the second Trump Kim summit while in contact with North Korean officials in Vietnam's capital city. You know, that's fueling speculation that Vietnam could host the next event. Be an interesting location. Vietnam has diplomatic relations with both the U.S. and North Korea, with North Korea even maintaining a diplomatic office there. You know, it also has the symbolic significance of a former communist country that has since reformed its economy to more of a market-based one.
That's true. You know, my mind is just... I thought...
Swirling in disbelief?
No. I was just curious. I know Trump makes a lot of products overseas. And I, for some reason, I thought Vietnam was one of them.
Oh.
Because I think he makes a lot of things in South Korea. And I think Vietnam, I'm not 100% sure. It was just something perhaps I might have.
Are these Trump ties, you mean?
I'm not quite sure exactly what products, but I think there was, Vietnam was one of them. I don't know, but, you know, because I too think Vietnam is kind of a, maybe, maybe not. Maybe there's, you know, some history there or something behind it, but it does seem a little odd. Or not odd, but unusual. But other than them having the diplomatic relations with both the U.S. and North Korea, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, let's hope they settle on the location so they can hopefully get to some meat and potatoes here the next couple of months.
Yeah, so they do have a common goal. Kim said that he's willing to meet Trump again anytime soon to achieve their common goal of denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula.
Yay.
So we'll have to see if that happens, but that means our troops would be coming home, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Which they should. We shouldn't be there anyway.
That would be...
Let the North and South work it out.
That would be huge. Now, you know, staying in that general area, you know, a U.S. guided missile destroyer patrolled near the disputed Paracel Islands in the South China Sea today, at their time, obviously, challenging Beijing's maritime claims. And that's according to U.S. Military officials. The USS McCampbell, Melody, conducted what the military calls a freedom of navigation operation, sailing within 12 nautical miles of three islands there named Tree, Lincoln, and Woody. The ship patrol was meant to challenge excessive maritime claims by Beijing, and to, quote, preserve access to the waterways as governed by international law, end quote. That's according to a spokesperson for the U.S. Pacific Fleet. Now, we're hearing that China did send a vessel to warn off the American ship and lodged a complaint with the U.S., a formal complaint. China urged the U.S. to stop taking provocative action in the region and avoid disrupting trade talks underway.
Well, you know, then this goes back to Vietnam. These parcels are claimed by Vietnam and Taiwan, but have been controlled by China since they seized them from the Vietnamese in 1974.
Chiang Kai-shek, you.
The U.S. Navy has conducted such patrols in the South China Sea for years, but tensions with Beijing over these operations, of course, escalated. You know, that's a lot of, you know, complaints and so forth, and you know, who knows if they'll ever do anything about it, but it seems that the U.S. and the Asian allies and partners are alarmed, in particular, by China's construction of these seven fortified artificial islands. including three with large airstrips. So China claims that the Spratlys overlay with those of Taiwan, Vietnam, Malaysia, Brunei, and the Philippines, a U.S. treaty ally. So Beijing has also upgraded several military outposts in the Parcells and deployed jet fighters to at least one. Did I say that right, Parcells?
I think so.
Okay.
Well, either that or we're both pronouncing it incorrectly, but we get the point. Hopefully listeners do too. Now, fascinatingly, not a major story, but since this is a story about gold and silver, it looks as though 30 Afghanis were killed sifting illegally for gold, Melody. apparently in a landslide in northeastern Afghanistan. Landslide occurred, although the mining is said to have not prompted the landslide. But it also injured apparently 15 people. A spokesperson said the exploitation of the mine was done illegally by locals paid by a mining company. That's too bad.
And I remember in Zimbabwe when they were having their, bad inflation, sending the children down to the streams to pan for gold. That was the only way that they could buy. It was the only way they could buy the bread. So, hearing stories like that, and then you kind of put
put others in harm's way.
Yeah. So
that's sad.
You don't have to pan for gold, ladies and gentlemen. That's hard work. All you have to do is call Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. The great special on Mid-State 63, $20 gold pieces, $1,540.
Sounds like a safer way to do it, Melody, and you get to talk to you to boot.
Yes, you don't have to worry about landslide, ladies and gentlemen. Give us a call, 800-375-4188. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be safe. Good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye. That's too bad.